Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. In communities throughout the country, officials and healthcare providers continue to struggle with what most everyone agrees is an opioid epidemic. It's led to tens of thousands of overdose deaths in just the past year.
But there may be a glimmer of hope in a small Vermont town where a strategy to fight drug trafficking seems to be working.
Rutland, Vermont, had developed a reputation as Heroin City, but now, partly thanks to something called Project Vision, drug-related crimes there are down, and hundreds of people have gone into drug treatment since the project began in 2012.
David Kennedy was a proponent of Project Vision. He's the director of the National Network for Safe Communities at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City.
Kennedy is also well-known here in Boston for helping develop the strategy called Operation Ceasefire that reduced gang violence here in the 1990s. We asked him why Project Vision seems to be working in Rutland.
The thing they've done that we don't think anybody else has done is they took steps to break the connection between sellers and buyers that made Rutland a regional heroin hotspot. And what they did in practice was there was a federal, state, and local investigation that really identified the way the market was working and who was central in it. And this is all public knowledge now. There were connections from weight drug dealers in Brooklyn who were coming up to Rutland. They were delivering their supplies to a network of addict dealers, and they put together a strategy that was designed to really incapacitate each level of the market. And then when they were ready, arrested for prosecution the weight dealers, so kind of middle, not cartel people, but not street dealers either, folks in the middle. And then for the much larger number of low-level addict dealers, they were offered an opportunity to enter into a very tightly constructed support and supervision regime. Nobody in law enforcement these days wants to ruin the life of low-level drug users. The field has really had a turnaround on this. But they couldn't continue dealing and they couldn't continue using. And so there was a strict supervision program that involved a lot of intense contact drug testing that was designed both to help them get back on their feet and to be tight enough so that for all practical purposes, they could not continue selling heroin. And then there was a neighborhood strategy because the dealing was concentrated in particular places within Rutland to look for any emergence of new low-level dealers and put them out of business, sometimes by means as simple as parking a patrol car in front of their house.
Opioids are a problem across the country, all right? This is lucrative, and especially if you're in a rural area. Somebody from New York can go to an area where heroin is not as prevalent and sell it for a much higher markup. So maybe you've been able to take care of this northwestern corner of Rutland, Vermont, comprised of a population of about 16,000 people. But, can you do this? Why won't they just go somewhere else?
The idea that they'll just move is theological in people's thinking about crime, and it's just wrong. And the meaning of a place like Rutland is the same meaning that these local crack markets had a decade ago. They create opportunities for strangers to connect and sell drugs safely. And if you're somebody who's been getting your supply from Rutland, you live somewhere else out across New England, and you have been functioning either as an addict or as a dealer or both, because you can go to Rutland and in short order hook up with a stranger and buy heroin and go back. If the people you're buying from don't exist anymore, you're out of business. And you can't just go somewhere else because this is an illicit market and you don't know where to go or who to do business from. You've shut the mechanism down.
Maybe you shut down the smaller mechanism, and you're saying you're not targeting sort of cartel level or big level folks. But so I'm talking about those folks, okay? And I'm not saying don't do it because they'll move somewhere else. I'm looking at it from a market perspective, saying, you know, whenever there's an opportunity to make money, people will try to figure out how to do that. So if I am, you know, ex-leader of a cartel and I say, okay, Rutland seems good. It's a crossroads here. I can make a lot of money here. Oops, police cracking down. All right, well, maybe I'll go to Burlington now. I'm talking about the decisions being made on that level and wondering how the principles of Project Vision can then be applied to be broader than just a small corner of a small town.
So you've just gone through a thought process that cartel leaders don't go through, right? That's not what happened. What happened was there's heroin in the country, and if you think that we need to shut the cartels down in order to keep heroin out of the country, well, how's that been working for you, right? We simply don't know how to do that. But what's happening, what happened in Rutland and what's happening in cities all over the country is that essentially by accident, certain places are emerging as the nodes in the new market. The cartel leaders didn't target Rutland. You know, a couple of people from Brooklyn figured out that they could do business there, that that worked for them. It cascades after that, but nobody planned it. If you know that you can do this in Rutland, then you know quite likely you can do it in a bunch of other places. And it may at this moment, right, this is early days, and we'll see how, whether this sort of thing is transferable and whether it's infected in other places and whether even Rutland can sustain it, right? But we know that working supply doesn't get us very far. We know that working demand doesn't get us very far. In the old street drug market scene, this was one of the very few things that actually made a big difference. And it may be true that this is a new tool now.
Well, there are media reports that show since this started, there have been decreases in Rutland in what are often drug-related crimes. Some residents reporting that they feel safer. So, in some regards, it may be, quote-unquote, working, although the jury may still be out. But I do want to ask you about the transferable question, because in the 90s, you were in Boston and you helped create what's known as Operation Ceasefire. And that was an effort to reduce gun and gang violence. So you're familiar with Boston, obviously a much larger city, a whole different area than Rutland. Could this kind of approach help in Boston, who, you know, a city that's also struggling with opioid use?
I think in principle it could. So I've just come from being out on the road, and people across the country in law enforcement and drug circles are beginning to pay attention to what happened in Rutland. And as you say, the jury's out. We all know that. But it's pretty interesting.
And so you think that even though we're a much larger city, we could do something similar probably in Boston? And I think the question obviously would be resources to do that sort of blanket approach, to actually have a police officer, even if it is only a few people, park in front of a suspected dealer's house and send a message that that's not going to happen.
What we learned the last time was that doing this was, in fact, tremendously less demanding of resources than the ordinary, endless, and largely unproductive drug enforcement that we're doing now. The amount of wasted energy in routine drug enforcement is just about literally incalculable.
I just want to clarify something. Do you think that this could be effective on a larger scale in a city like Boston?
Yes, I do. If it works in principle, then getting it to work on a larger scale ought to simply be a process of scaling up.
It sounds to me like a lot of this does still require a lot of input from the criminal justice system. You find these user dealers, you put them on probation, you make sure that there are strict consequences, you issue warrants if somebody's not complying and tell them if they start dealing again, they're going to be arrested. In the, you know, at what may be different here from, say, Operation Ceasefire times, and certainly from the times when we were dealing with crack cocaine, is that there's not a lot of faith in the criminal justice system right now, right? I mean, people, you know, there are a lot of stories about what's happening there. And I'm wondering, you know, how you reconcile all of that with making sure that there's oversight, in a way, of the criminal justice system to make sure that it can carry out these functions to make this plan successful and carry them out in an unbiased, fair way.
Well, it's funny that you look back to the Operation Ceasefire days in Boston as a, you know, a moment of heightened criminal justice legitimacy, because it was anything but. The, you know, Operation Ceasefire was a response to the fact that all the criminal justice and community work being done in Boston to address youth violence wasn't working. Yeah, and it was created out of that as a very special response to general incapacity. When the street drug market intervention emerged, the dominant narrative in a lot of those neighborhoods was, this could only happen if the police were bringing the drugs in, and they're bringing the drugs in so they can lock our kids up.
Well, there are people who think that about heroin.
Yeah, of course there are. The point is that these special responses are tailored to that situation. And just for example, when the police and prosecutors and probation and parole demonstrate by their actions that people they could be locking up for decades instead are being approached, they're being approached with respect, they are being told, you're selling heroin is completely unacceptable and it is going to stop. But we don't think that makes you a psychopath, and we're not going to throw you away. We're going to help you and support you while we make sure that you don't do this anymore. Communities typically rally around that.
Is there enough being done to try to crack down on supply?
I'll say once again, how's that been working for you? People have been trying to address supply at the transnational and cartel and such level for 40 years now, and all it's done has been nothing.
But do you think this is a bright spot?
I think we'll see. But there aren't a lot of bright spots right now. And so the fact that this even has some potential is pretty encouraging.
David Kennedy, director of the National Network for Safe Communities, which is a project of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.